From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Christmas weekend 2020. This Sunday evening, the Packers host the Tennessee Titans, and at about the same time, the Bucks are in New York with the Knicks. We have some good news to start today's podcast. According to the World Health Organization, Santa Claus is immune to COVID-19. Was there ever any doubt? Two couples have been pooling their money and buying lottery tickets from the same convenience store for over 45 years with absolutely no luck. So they tried a new store and immediately won $680,000. The moral of the story is, invest in the lottery for 45 years and you just might break even. A Russian man drunk on vodka wanted to kiss his horse. And no, I don't know why. Well, Trigger wasn't having any of that. And in mid-smooch, she bit off his nose. A young couple had been dating for 8 years, but the woman was tired of waiting around for a marriage proposal. So she went to court and sued him. Well, at least she didn't bite off his nose. And finally, a department store in Belgium was trying to do something completely different this holiday season. Instead of sitting on Santa's lap, the kids were going to sit on Satan's lap. No, it's not a typo. The store thought the kids would have more fun with the Prince of Darkness. The store got a lot of free publicity, but not the kind they wanted. So Santa is back. Thank goodness. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kilb, Art Rothschild, Joel Dreesing, and getting us started, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you, Max. With the Christmas shortened week, we thought we'd do a special holiday edition of the Money Talk podcast. Just looking back at 2020, obviously a week still to go here, but with most of it in the books, I think we certainly have some comments we can make about how the year has gone so far. And so, you know, I think first and foremost, just as a jumping off point, it has to be pointed out that this year has been incredibly challenging in so many ways for so many people. And through this holiday season, that's not lost on me. And so I'm grateful for all that we have, grateful for all that we're able to do for each other, for our clients. And again, I think grateful that for everything that's happened, we've, you know, kind of wrapped this year in a way that for the most part feels like it hasn't been all that bad, at least as far as markets are concerned. So, you know, just as we dive in here, I think one of the things that always sticks out to me as we transition years is that it is a time of year in which we get countless market forecasts, we get countless prognostications, we get countless, you know, here's what you should expect over the next year. I think for the most part, those miss all the specifics of what actually happens in the year to come. And so this year, more than most, I think this isn't a year for I told you so, because as we look at kind of what we thought would be the issues of 2020, they absolutely have been a very different thing. And, you know, just, you know, as a first thought for me, the trade war was the thing that I think as we entered the year was the thing we thought would bring us down. Certainly some people thought that this was the year for a recession. Certainly, you know, we entertained the idea of becoming a bit more conservative in light of those kinds of things. But I don't think anyone saw up until the very end of last year, even heard of this coronavirus being the thing that would take us down the way it did. And then, you know, as you transition to what that meant, you know, Joel, I like to jump off with just some of the big economic themes that resulted from that. And as it relates directly to it, anything in particular stand out to you as kind of things that have kind of shaped the year?
Yeah, well, to back up, before I took this job, I was basically a labor reporter covering labor economics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I had been doing that for a while. So a lot of the economic things I look at, I tend to look at from that labor sort of lens. And it's also relevant because we talk about how consumer spending is 2/3 of the U.S. economy, that spending comes from workers. I mean, the work and employment and wages are all very important to all that. So the good news is we started off this year relatively healthy. I mean, it's the longest economic expansion in history. Unemployment rate was the lowest it's been in your lifetime. We had unemployment insurance claims averaging 208,000 a week back in February. That's the lowest it's been since 1969. So, and a lot of the economists who are sort of looking ahead were thinking, well, you know, they were talking about recession, but none of them looking at the fundamentals saw anything imminent, right? So that's all good. So it's like being a healthy person and then you get sick. You'd rather be healthy going into the sickness, right? So so then we got sick. So then, you know, the pandemic came, there were lockdowns, businesses shut, government shut, people, you know, were ordered to work from home. A lot of jobs were lost. We lost 22 million jobs. And, you know, one of the overused words of the pandemic is unprecedented. A lot of these numbers are unprecedented. Since then, we've recovered. We've, you know, people started going back to work. Businesses were opening up. We've added back about 12 million jobs, but that still means we have 10 million or so that weren't added back. And that's where, you know, that's where there's some concerns. And we see, you know, some hope as the year ends with the vaccines that are going out and a sense that maybe by mid-year next year, we'll have more of a back to normal sort of a thing. But a lot of those 10 million jobs won't be coming back. And that's a good news, bad news sort of a thing for the people who have those jobs, for the businesses that may be closing forever. That's not necessarily good for the economy overall. Sometimes that's good. And sometimes it takes something, you know, like a recession to shake up. It's like a brush fire that goes through and is able to establish new growth and gives us excuses to say, hey, you know, maybe that business wasn't a business that should be operating now anyway. Let's think of something better to do. And my concern so far is that we're seeing, even though we've seen the unemployment rate, you know, go from 3.5% to 14.7% in April, down to 6.7% in November. So we're making progress there. But in the meantime, there are more have-nots. And that's the concern, the people who have dropped out of the workforce, who are just not even looking for jobs anymore because they don't expect to find the sort of job that they had before, because they know that they won't have that sort of work again, because their kids are home and they have to take care of the kids, or their childcare has shut down and they can't work remotely from home. So those are some of the concerns that I have at this point. We're seeing a higher rate of people who are long-term unemployed. And again, getting back to the economy and consumer spending, it's those people that we have to worry about as far as them getting employed again and having income again and spending. But again, we started out this year at a healthy spot. So, you know, we've recovered somewhat. We've hit some snags in recent months, but, you know, we'll see going forward.
And Joel, I think your analogy of the brush fire is such it's so on the nose, because, you know, we absolutely have seen some pretty significant damage. And I think as we look at what that damage means, particularly for stocks, it has meant some, especially in March or late February into March, it meant some pretty significant pain. But what I think, you know, one of the conversations I've had more broadly about what that means for the market is that it has set us up for areas of growth that we either were going to see eventually, things like, you know, virtual meeting technologies, or things like data storage that wasn't as critical to infrastructure as it is today. Or it's put us on a path towards the development of whole new technologies, whole new methods of conducting business that we hadn't even really explored before. And because companies have been forced into this rather than choosing to do it on their own, in which companies given the choice will tend to proceed very slowly into a lot of this stuff because there are risks to making mistakes. You can damage your brand, you can spend money that you're never going to get back. But when you're forced to do this stuff, oftentimes you can't think about the consequences of what if I'm wrong about this one choice. Instead, you've got to think about if I don't act, the consequences are going to be far greater. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of things market-wise, a lot of themes that have developed over the year. For me, that's a big one. Brian, I know that, you look at kind of developments that have happened. You've picked out a few things, I'm sure, that you've started to see or that you've seen through the year that may continue. Anything in particular stand out to you?
Well, two comments I would make, Kyle. And, you know, I like to talk about context all the time. You know, we're always, you know, how we see the future and even to some degree the past is always kind of filtered through this view of what we're looking at right now, you know, and that's so unfair because things will be so different. And I think even if you look at this year, it's pretty easy to kind of talk about COVID and its impact, but you know, we're kind of forgetting that there were, what, 26 hurricanes, the most hurricanes in a year, you know, and they were terrible. As you guys know, I have a daughter in San Francisco. The wildfires were devastating out there, you know, and then, of course, we had an election. I think everybody got the memo on that. So that was, in and of itself, a distraction, to say the least, and social unrest in so many other areas. So it wasn't just that it was a COVID-dominated year, but it masked a lot of other real challenges that we had that all have, to some degree, economic repercussions, you know? And I think on the flip side of it, I also think it kind of took some of the headlines away from some of the amazing things that happened this year, you know? The recently announced new battery technology for cars where we think the battery will last 250,000 miles, perhaps. You know, the solid-state lithium battery that... they're pretty flammable. And so they've taken a lot of the danger of these things blowing up out. Rechargeable in 15 minutes. You know, that's a game changer for electric cars. Apple's M1 chip, you know, you're basically getting a whole computer on a chip now. And the implications for how that changes the industry are enormous. 5G technology, you got 50 times the bandwidth of what you're used to now. How does that change how we do things? The vaccine, mRNA research, you know, how will that change, you know, how we deal with disease in the future? How will the way we've tried to deal with COVID through our healthcare system, how will that force pressure on changes in how we deliver care and who we care for? And I mean, there's just so many things I think that if not force change, accelerate change. And we have yet to even begin to feel and see some of those things. So, you know, it's tough to get through a year like this and look at, you know, as you started the show, Kyle, look at it, the people that have been hurt by this thing. But it's also, you know, especially a good time of year to kind of look at all the things that are coming out of this and how in a positive way they may influence the future and you know, we may grow in ways we never would have guessed, you know, before this year. So got to take the good with the bad, right?
I absolutely think you're right there. And Art, obviously, I'll give you the same question with the caveat that, I think you have some particular thoughts, just having this conversation with you before, you have some particular thoughts on how investors have navigated a lot of those issues, a lot of the things we've seen this year. So please share, I think what the other part of that conversation is, which is, yeah, a lot of stuff has happened, but how, as investors, do we think about navigating those issues and maybe why 2020 was the perfect example for that?
Yeah, the market is a teacher, in effect. We don't know how it's going to react, the market itself or the individual investors who make the market, how they're going to invest to the news. And so I just love listening to what Joel and Brian had to say, because it's fascinating. So the lead story for the year was COVID. The biggest problem has been all these people losing their jobs. But the Fed is suggesting that, oh, don't worry about it. Well, they're not saying don't worry about it. We got to do something about it in the interim. But we're going to get unemployment down to 4% within a couple of years. It's pretty much what the Fed is forecasting. And all these other major things that Brian talked about have been drowned out by the negativity surrounding COVID, when you can look at the positive aspect of that being, look at how quickly we developed the vaccine. So what struck me most about this year and the way investors appropriately or inappropriately reacted to it is that if you would have, you know, the stock market peaked on February 19th, as you indicated, we had a good start to the year. But then all of a sudden, you know, 15 days to slow the spread, things being shut down, bam, 35% later, you know, the S&P was down by March 23rd. But then who at that point would have anticipated that we were going to have this dramatic of a recovery? And what you talked about before, how you, people forecast what's going to happen during the course of the year, who would have suggested that the S&P 500 would be up 17%, which it is roughly by the end of the year, and it's not quite yet, but the end of the year. But who would have expected that would happen when you have this type of a major, you know, pandemic? And so that to me is shocking. So you can't, you never know what's going to happen. And going back to something that Brian has said repeatedly, and it's very important, we allocate, we don't speculate. We make sure that the money is appropriately placed in places in which, even though we don't know what's going to happen, we've got an answer, as Bob says, on a regular basis. We have to have an answer for everything, especially in light of the fact we never know specifically what's going to happen. So I think this has been the best year for learning from the market itself, that you shouldn't react to the market. You have to stay nimble, you have to reallocate periodically, but don't make mistakes.
You know, Arthur, I just love that reference to teaching. And, you know, if you look at the year in terms of what we learned, you know, or in terms of what people should learn, you know, I would say it, what do people try and do? They try and predict the future and then they try to invest based on that. Well, let's all agree that you can't predict the future and that COVID was perhaps one of the best examples of that we're going to see in our lifetime. But having said that, even had you predicted COVID and had you predicted hurricanes and had you predicted, you know, wildfires and whatnot, you wouldn't have predicted that the market would have risen, you know, whichever index you want to pick, 15 to 40%. So I think, you know, people want to play this game of trying to predict the future and then using some rational approach to attach it to some end result. And this year is a reminder to me of the humility of the markets that, you know, you do your best. You take advantage of the knowledge that you know. You build balanced portfolios, which cover many answers, not just the one you think is going to happen. And you take advantage of the underlying circumstances to minimize risk and make as much money as you can within that framework of risk. And looking forward, just remind yourself what happened this year because it's awfully unpredictable, you know.
Well, and I think what strikes me about all of this is that, you know, the market bottomed right around the end of March. If, as an investor, you decided right at the end of March that you needed some money out of your portfolio, the challenge becomes if you build your portfolio based on what you assume is going to happen rather than building it for anything that could happen, you needed that cash. And where did you take it from? You took it from stuff that was down because entering the year, you thought, okay, it's going to be a pretty good year. And the reality is that it has been a really good year, but you had to give yourself enough time to get there. And so if you did that, if you left yourself some safer things to take cash from, whether it's cash directly or whether it's higher quality, shorter term bonds that just didn't sell off the way the markets did more broadly, you were able to buy yourself that time. And so I think the other thing that I've learned from this year is that even for investors who think that their time horizon is far shorter than, you know, the typical investor, just because your time horizon or just because you're retired or just because you're 80 and you think, well, I've got 15, 20 years, I'm going to spend all this money down at that point, it doesn't mean that you need it all tomorrow, but it does mean that some of it you are going to need tomorrow. And so you got to pay attention to that piece of your portfolio that you know you're going to need. But with the rest of it, you've got to trust that given enough time, we get back to where we thought we were going to be. It's why we always say that, from year to year, stock markets and earnings don't necessarily look identical. But if you look at the long-term track record of earnings growth versus the long-term track record of the return of markets, they tend to look fairly similar if you spread that out enough. And again, I'm not even talking 40, 50-year stretches. I'm talking over 3 or 4 year stretches. They tend to level out. And so as we kind of look at what the opportunity set is for investors as we entered the year, we thought, okay, there's some room for things to move higher, maybe not to the extent that we actually saw. But then again, we also weren't positioned for things to fall apart. And so I think a strong reminder that you need to have cash, a strong reminder that you need to know if things do fall apart, what am I going to do about it? Not simply sell everything today, buy it back when things get cheaper, but understanding that there was a long-term plan before we entered that environment, and we're going to stick to that plan as we move through it.
You know, Kyle, I think when you look at what we do for a living, and I'd like to think that we add some value in a broad array of, you know, support for people to get some security in their financial life and to get from point A where they're working to point B where they're retired or whatever their circumstances are. But the single best thing that we can do for people is in the middle of March when stocks are down 35%, assure them that that's not the right time to sell. You know, and that's the mistake that people make most often because we're emotional creatures by nature, and you know, greed and fear drive a lot of people. And we can talk to you all day long about empirical evidence, you know, and valuations and all these other things. But when people get scared, they do what their intuition tells them. And I think, you know, building a good portfolio and having some understanding of what happens in these ups and downs, if whatever it takes to get you through those periods of time, that's where the real value is added. And I think this year is as good a reminder of that as we're going to have in a long time, I think. So, learn your lessons, as Art said, you know, learn your lessons from this year and carry them with you, and you'll be a better investor down the road.
And then to quote my friend Brian, who on a regular basis suggests you shouldn't be speculating. Don't think that you have to go out there and buy the IPO for Grubhub or Airbnb because your neighbor might have gotten it or something. It could fall just as easy as it could go up. And we just have solid, you know, solid foundation for your portfolio. And again, cash is not trash, as Kyle just indicated. You need it to spend it, and it's good to have plenty of it available, especially as we get older, as some of us can relate to.
Who is the we in that? Art, who is the
we? I'm not going to comment.
Just asking for a friend.
Maybe with this argument, a good time to wrap it up here today. As as I stated at the open, we are incredibly grateful, all of us at Landis & Company, all of us more broadly, for the wonderful relationships we have with all of our clients. Certainly this time of year helps to remind us of all the things that we've been able to help with this year, all the things that, you know, we're grateful to be able to do. But I think most importantly, you know, I think it's the reflection on the year that was that can help us as investors learn the lessons, Art, as you said, of how we should navigate investing for the years to come. So thank you all for joining me today. Thank you to our listeners for continuing to dial into us. We always enjoy doing the program, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.